Now let's continue on. Welcome everybody to the Feast of Tabernacles, day number 4, 2008. And last time we covered The Singularity Is Near by Ray Kurzweil, who is one of the great intellectuals of our age in putting together what he envisions as the evolutionary future of man by technology and being able to have human beings so that they can improve their intelligence, improve everything about them by being able to take advantage of technology, hook up to computers, and use all of the rapid knowledge that computers have. And mankind, in his own way, is rejecting God. And what they are doing, and intellectuals just like Ray Kurzweil are doing, they are worshiping their own minds. They are worshiping their own intellectual capacity. And they are locked in to a logic of evolution which blinds their minds. Let's come to Psalm 14 and let's see where we ended up last time, showing that a lot of this thinking has to do exactly as the same thinking that Satan the devil had. I will become like the Most High. Well, you can't become like the Most High when you reject God. Actually, the truth is, God's plan is so that we become the very children of God. And we become greater and more than what Ray Kurzweil has imagined in his super singularity of combining human intelligence and improving the evolution of human intelligence with the evolution of the non-biological machines so that we have millions and millions and millions of times more intellect, and yet he hasn't solved the problem of what do you do with the evil of human nature. And that's exactly where those who don't believe in God or reject God end up. Now let's come to Psalm 14, page 710. While he has concluded how wise he is and how great we're going to invent and how marvelous we are going to perform. If you don't know God, if you reject God, doesn't matter how great you think you are, God says you're a fool. Now that can be intellectual fools, the super elite, ultimate intellectual elite are fools. Now we'll see that here. Let's come to Psalm 14. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The whole basis of this is that man will solve his own problems and man will expand and fill the whole universe with his intelligence. However, God says they are corrupt because he can't get rid of the corruption of human nature. Only God can. They have done abominable works. There is none that does good. Well, they think this is good. And we're going to read a little bit more of it today. See where the ultimate conclusion is coming. Well, they think it's good. It's evil. It's abominable. God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any who understood who seek after God. That's the most important thing that man can do is seek after God. They're all corrupt. They are altogether filthy. There is none that does good, no, not even one. And that's why in the salvation through Christ, we need the goodness of God, the righteousness of Christ, the imputed righteousness that God gives to us. That's why we need, with the Spirit of God, to have the laws and commandments written in our hearts and in our minds to give us the true wisdom of God, not the intellectual vanity of this world, of those who profess themselves to be wise, but they're utter fools. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread? They have not called upon the Lord. There they are in great fear, for God is with the generation of the righteous. And that's what's going to happen to them. When their worlds come crashing down upon them at the return of Jesus Christ. You have put to shame the counsel of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. Oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion, when the Lord turns away the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad. And that's when the millennium is going to begin. Let's come to Romans, the first chapter, and let's see. And it's exactly like what is happening in the politics in America with the presidential election. We have someone who says he has change we can believe in, and that he is going to bring change, and he has better judgment than anyone else so far, and yet he has the experience of a gnat. And he's going to be our Messiah. And people say, well, it's time for a change. Change you can believe in. Well, here's change you can believe in. It's going to end in utter destruction, and so will that. Now let's come to Romans 1. And let's see what God says about these kinds of things. See, because God being merciful and kind, and God waiting for the sin to come to the full. The sin of the world hasn't come to the full yet. And here's the great intellectual, scientific, technological sin that must blossom to its fullness, as well as the evil and perversity, as well as the occult and the Satanism and all of that. Everything must come to the full, which then is the climax or the completion of this age and the return of Christ and the setting up of the kingdom of God, whom God has selected each one of us to participate in and to set it up and to bring righteousness and truth and love and knowledge and understanding that is going to fulfill the human life and expression with the fulfillment from God, rather than bowing down to some machine and say, oh, machine, save me, you are so intelligent. Now, let's understand something that's important. Let's come down here to verse 16, Romans 1, page 1146. Paul writes, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, and it's not a gospel of religion. It is a gospel of the kingdom of God and the setting up of the kingdom of God and all that that entails. And it's about conversion. It is about change. It is about becoming the very sons and daughters of God. And it is about God's rule on the earth and in the universe, which he is going to share with us. So this book, which this man probably rejects and despises, and being a Jew, probably would not accept anything of the New Testament, is the answer to the foolishness of what he is proposing. We shouldn't be ashamed of the gospel of Christ, because it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, both to the Jew first, listen up, Ray Kurzweil, and to the Greek. For therein the righteousness of God is revealed from faith unto faith, because the most important thing for men to do is not expand their knowledge and intelligence and their abilities, but to know God, to have a relationship with God, to believe in God, to love God, to hope in his plan, not in the things of men. According as it is written, the just shall live by faith. And you see, It would be counted as foolishness if I said to Ray Kurzweil, the real answers are in the Bible, and what you have is vanity and foolishness. Now, you may succeed to a good degree of what is going to take place, that you claim is going to take place, and we'll read a little bit more about it in just a bit. But you see, knowing God is the greatest thing that we can do. Having the Spirit of God is the greatest thing that can be given to us. Not some computer we can hook our brain up to. Just shall live by faith. Now, converse of that, verse 18. Indeed, Paul writes, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven upon all ungodliness. That is ungodliness. And unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Get God out of the schools, God out of the government, God out of our lives, God out of politics, but they can't take God out of our hearts. They may take our heads, but they can't take God away from us, because nothing will separate us from God. We are the answer to what Kurzweil proposes. not his vain intellectual buddies. Verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest among them, for God has manifested to him. Where does he think the laws and dynamics and all of these things of technology come from but from God? But as we will see, they're so locked into evolutionary thought that they can't comprehend anything else. For God has manifested it to them. For the invisible things of him are perceived from the creation of the world, being understood by the things that were made, both his eternal power and Godhead, so they are without excuse. And much more so, being a Jew. Because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their own reasonings, and their foolish hearts were darkened. While professing themselves to be the wise ones, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into the likeness of the image of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed creatures and creeping things and computers and things that the hands of man have made. For this cause, see, because there is a God who judges. For this cause, God also abandoned them to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to disgrace their own bodies between themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and they worshipped and served the created thing more than the one who is creator, who is blessed forever, who is blessed into the ages of eternity. Amen. They worship their own minds, they worship their own machines, they worship their own technology, and pat themselves on the back and give themselves awards and have banquets to exalt themselves and tell them how great they are and what a fantastic future that they have to look forward to if they would only come to the point of singularity. Now, I need to read a little bit more here to show you how they propose to accomplish this. And they're tinkering with the very creation of God to do it. And let's see what they propose. Now, I'm going to read you something here, which it's going to be given at a much earlier date than some of the things we are reading, which is the introduction to his chapter 5. There are few things of which the present generation is more justly proud than the wonderful improvements which are daily taking place in all efforts of mechanical applications. But what would happen if technology continued to evolve so much more rapidly than the animal and vegetable kingdoms? Would it replace us in the supremacy of the earth? Well, a machine will, according to this. Just as the vegetable kingdom was slowly developed from the mineral, and in like manner the animal supervened upon the vegetable, so now, in these last few ages, an entirely new kingdom has sprung up, of which we have yet only to see what will one day be considered the antediluvian prototypes of the race. Isn't that something? The best of the races this side of the flood. And where did we start with this? Noah was perfect in his generations. We are daily giving machines greater power and supplying by all sorts of ingenious contrivances that self-regulating, self-acting power which will be to them what intelligence has been to the human race. Samuel Butler, 1863, 4 years after the publication of Darwin's Origin of the Species. He later writes, "Who will be man's successor?" To which the answer is, we ourselves, creating our own successors. Man will become to the machines what the horse and the dog are to man, and the conclusion being that machines are, or are becoming, animate. In other words, machines will become our gods. Now that's the introduction to his chapter on three overlapping revolutions entitled G and R. The first half of the 20th century, Kurzweil writes, will be characterized by three overlapping revolutions in genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. And they have already proposed that they can make by nanotechnology a tube which will reach clear up into the heavens. Sound a little bit like Genesis 11? Let us build a tower whose height will reach into the heavens. Yes. These will usher in what I referred to earlier as Epic Five, the beginning of the singularity. We are in the early stages of the G, or genetic revolution, today. By understanding the information processes underlying life, we are starting to learn to reprogram our biology to achieve the virtual elimination of diseases. Dramatic expansion of human potential and radical life extension. Hence, Moravec points out, however, that no matter how successfully we fine-tune our DNA-based biology, humans will remain second-class robots. Meaning that biology will never be able to match what we will be able to engineer once we fully understand biology's principles of operation. We will become greater than ourselves. The N revolution, which is nanotechnology, will enable us to redesign and rebuild, molecule by molecule, our bodies, our brains, and the world with which we interact, going far beyond the limitations of biology. Now that sounds absolutely scintillating. Well, let's see if they do it. You know, God tells all evolutionists, get your own dirt. Don't use mine. The most powerful implementing revolution is R, which then R is robotics. Human-level robots, with their intelligence derived from our own but redesigned to far exceed human capabilities. Now, if you can't get rid of the evil, how then are you going to stop the robots if they all get together and conspire to kill all human beings? How can they reign supreme without their human masters? Human-level robots, with their intelligence derived from our own but redesigned to far exceed human capacities. R represents the most significant transformation. Have you heard that word? In politics and science and New Age religion and etc. Because intelligence is the most powerful force in the universe. Wrong, wrong, wrong. God is the most powerful force in the universe. And you are bucking up against God. And God is going to take care of you. He'll let you design all of these things. He'll let all of these things work. And in one whack, stop it all. All he has to do is just cut off the electricity, right? Or send a powerful magnetic storm that will fry all of these machines and make them worthless. Now how great are you? Intelligence is sufficiently, if sufficiently advanced, is, well, smart enough to anticipate and overcome any obstacles that stand in its path. What an arrogant statement. Now, I saw the interview of Ray Kurzweil by Glenn Beck, and he's modest, unassuming, very, very nice presentation of a man. You see, so Satan doesn't send some monster on to drive us away because he wants to allure us all in. But that the intelligence, human intelligence, enhanced by the machine intelligence, is smart enough to anticipate and overcome any obstacle that that any obstacles that stand in its path. While each revolution will solve the problems from earlier transformations through evolution, it will also introduce new perils. How do you get rid of the problems? G will overcome the age-old difficulties of disease and aging, but establish the potential for new bio-engineered viral threats, supervirus, now aided by machines and nanotechnology. Once N, or nanotechnology, is fully developed, we will be able to apply it to protect ourselves from all biological hazards. But it will create the possibility of its own self-replicating dangers. Why don't you ask God how He did it? Because He's got the perfect answer in our biological bodies. Oh, but you won't do that because you don't believe in God. Which will be far more powerful than anything biological. So there you have the seeds of your own destruction sowed in the solution. And that's a basic premise you have forgotten, Mr. Kurzweil. Every new solution has within it sown the seeds of its own destruction. Yes. We can protect ourselves from these hazards with fully developed R, that is, robotics, nanorobotics. But what will protect us from the pathological intelligence that exceeds our own? How are you going to do that? Machines ganging up on you to kill you. I do have a strategy for dealing with these issues, which I discuss at the end of chapter 8. In this chapter, however, we will examine how the singularity will unfold through these three overlapping revolutions of genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. Well, let's see what else he has here. It has to do with genetics. Underlying all wonders of life and misery of disease are information processes, essentially software programs that are surprisingly compact. Oh, even for you, God made something that challenges your thoughts. What do you know about that? The entire human genome, which they are trying to map out and number, is a sequential binary code containing only about 800 million bytes of information. I think you're going to find you're greatly underestimating that. As I mentioned earlier, when its massive redundancies are removed using conventional compression techniques, we are left with only 30 to 100 million bytes, equivalent to the size of the average, that is, I have that page cut off, but anyway, a very small size. He continues, designer baby boomers. Sufficient information already exists today to slow down disease and the aging process to the point that baby boomers like myself can remain in good health until the full blossoming of the biotechnology revolution, which will itself be a bridge to the nanotechnology revolution, so we can live longer. In The Fantastic Voyage, and he even made a movie out of it, right? Live Long Enough to Live Forever, which I co-authored with Terry Grossman, MD, leading longevity expert. We will discuss these three bridges to radical life extension, today's knowledge, biotechnology, and nanotechnology. And in that, he wrote this. Whereas some of my contemporaries may be satisfied to embrace aging gracefully as part of the cycle of life, that is not my view. It may be natural, but I don't see anything positive in losing my mental ability, sensory acuity, physical limberness, sexual desire, or any other human ability. Well, then why do you want to hook up to a machine if you don't want to lose those? I view disease and death at any age as a calamity, as problems to be overcome. So here's how he overcomes it. When I was 40, my biological age was around 38. Although I am now 56, a comprehensive test of my biological aging, measuring various sensory sensitivities, lung capacity, reaction time, memory, and related tests. So he's being tested all the time. Conducted at Grossman's Longevity Center, measured my biological age at 40. So he only aged 2 years in 16. Although there is not yet a consensus on how to measure biological age, my scores on the test matched population norms for this age. So according to this set of tests, I have not aged very much in the last 16 years, which is confirmed by the many blood tests I take as well as the way I feel. What is the secret? These results are not accidental. I have been very aggressive about reprogramming my biochemistry. I take 250 supplements, pills, a day, and receive a half dozen intravenous therapies each week. One every day, except for whichever day he doesn't take it. Basically, nutritional supplements delivered directly into my bloodstream, thereby bypassing my GI tract. So now he is a hydroponic human being. As a result, the metabolic reactions in my body are completely different than they would be otherwise. But you see, you're cheating. You're using all of this biological information to extend your life, and you say that all of the revolution that you're coming up with here is going to extend it. Well, I can understand. You want to live long enough to get there. Okay. Approaching this as an engineer, I measure dozens of levels of nutrients such as vitamins, minerals, and fats, hormones, metabolic byproducts in my blood and other body samples such as hair and saliva. Overall, my levels are where I want them to be, although I continually fine-tune my program based upon the research that I conduct with Grossman. Although my program may seem extreme, it is extremely conservative and optimal based upon my current knowledge. Grossman and I have extensively researched. Chapter 6, The Impact. Now here's where he begins to put it together. And I will be done in just a few minutes with reading just a few things. A planopy of impacts. In other words, a whole overarching umbrella of impacts on the human life. What will the nature of the human experience be once non-biological intelligence predominates? What are the implications for the human machine civilization when strong artificial intelligence and nanotechnology can create any product, any situation, any environment that we can imagine at will? I stress the role of imagination here because we will still be constrained in our creations to what we can imagine. Oh, what a shame. But our tools for bringing imagination to life are growing exponentially more powerful. Watch out for your vain reasonings. As the singularity approaches, we will have to reconsider our ideas about the nature of human life and redesign our human institutions. We will explore a few of these ideas and institutions in the next chapter. So we have here now, for example, the intertwined revolutions of genetics and nanotechnology, our robots, will transform our frail version of 1.0 human bodies. Did you realize that? You have a 1.0 human body? That's not a very good body. Well, God says he's going to transform it. So he can go up. He's got a three-point body here, 0.3 point that we're going to get to. God has one that's going to be spiritual. I suggest, Ray, you get with God's program if you want to do some of these things and get off your high horse and your intellectual vanity and all of those scientists who work with you, because though you may accomplish some of these things, you're going to end up finding yourself fighting against God. And you still have not solved the problem of death. You're only 56 and living on 250 supplements a day and 6 transfusions per week. What are you going to do when you have to double them to maintain what you have? All right, let's go on. We'll transform our frail 1.0 human bodies into their far more durable and capable version 2.0 counterparts. Billions of nanobots, now these are robots nano size, molecular size, will travel through the bloodstream in our bodies and brains. God already created them. If you do what God says, it will work. In our bodies, they will destroy pathogens, correct genetic or DNA errors. How are you going to get rid of the evil of human nature? Well, now, if you want a sex transformation, you don't have to go through an operation. Just go to the machine and tinker around and give yourself an estrogen DNA background, and voila, you'll become a woman. Or if you're a woman and want to become a man, you just go to the testosterone section of the computer and you say, I want to become a man. And out you come. Eliminate toxins, perform many other tasks to enhance our physical well-being. As a result, we will be able to live indefinitely without aging. In our brains, the massively distributed nanobots will interact with our biological neurons. So just infuse the brain with millions, hundreds of millions of nanobots to make our brains better. But who is to say that they will live? As well as neurological correlations to our emotions from within the nervous system. More important, with this intimate connection between our biological thinking and the non-biological intelligence we are creating, it will profoundly expand human intelligence. Warfare will move directly toward nanobotic-based weapons. I wonder if that sounds a little bit like Revelation 8 and 9. How about that? Learning will be the first move online, but once our brains are online, we will be able to download new knowledge and skills. What do you want to learn? Oh, let's do that. Boop. There it is. The role of work will be to create knowledge of all kinds, from music and art to math and science. The role of play will be, well, to create knowledge so there won't be a clear distinction between work and play. Intelligence on and around the earth will continue to expand exponentially until we reach the limits of matter and energy to support intellectual computation. As we approach this limit in our corner of the galaxy, the intelligence of our civilization will expand into the rest of the universe, quickly reaching the fastest speed possible. We understand that the speed of light, but there are suggestions it may be able to be circumvented, so forth. So he says, so what is left? Let us consider where we are in the current era, early 2030. They will have improved and replaced so many things of the body. We've eliminated the heart, lungs, red and white blood corpuscles, platelets, pancreas, thyroid, and all hormone-producing organs, kidneys, kidneys, bladder, liver, lower esophagus, stomach, and small intestines, large intestines, and the bowels. Wow. Eliminate all of that. What we have left at this point is the skeleton, skin, sex organs. How are they going to work without hormones? Sensory organs, mouth, and upper esophagus, and brain. You're just like these things you see on television today. These walking robots. And the only thing you have is your brain. The skeleton is a stable structure, and we already have a reasonable understanding of how it works. Well, you better learn a whole lot more if you're going to do all of this. We can now replace parts of it. Yeah, I've got artificial hips. He says artificial hips and joints. But that's not creating new life. And let me tell you, my experience has been, even though they work well, they are an absolutely poor substitute for the creation of God. had I taken care of it better and not have been so stupid, I wouldn't have put myself in that position to need them. So while I have them, I have to be very, very careful with them because they could fail. All right, let's go forward here. Although the procedure requires painful surgery and our current technology for doing so has serious limitation, interlinking nanobots will one day provide the ability to augment and ultimately replace the skeleton through a gradual non-invasive process, build a new skeleton, the human skeleton version 2.0 human body, will be very strong, stable, and self-repairing. We will not notice the absence of many of our organs, such as the liver and pancreas, since we will not directly experience their operation. But the skin, which includes our primary and secondary sex organs, will prove to be an organ we will actually want to keep. Now, why want to do that? If you've gone this far. Or we may at least want to maintain its vital functions of communication and pleasure. No, reinvent it. Do some nanotechnology magic here. However, we will ultimately be able to improve on the skin with new nano-engineered supple materials that will provide greater protection for physical and thermal environmental effects while enhancing our capability for intimate communication, sex. The same observation holds for the mouth and upper esophagus, which constitute the remaining aspects of the digestive system that we use to experience the act of eating. Why eat? Redesigning the human brain. Hold on, I am almost done. As we discussed earlier, the process of reverse engineering and redesign will also encompass the most important system in our bodies, the brain. We already have implants based on neuromorphic molding, reverse engineering of the human brain and nervous system for a rapidly growing list of brain regions. That's why they are doing all this brain research. Researchers at MIT and Harvard, that's where the real intellects are. Oh, my. And let's see, Yale, Harvard. I think Obama came from Harvard, didn't he, or Princeton, somewhere around there. He's got to be one of these wonderful, great intellects. That's why he's bringing about so much change, do you suppose? Are developing neural implants to replace damaged retinas. Implants are available for Parkinson's patients to communicate directly with the ventral posterior nucleus and subthalamic nucleus regions of the brain to reverse the most devastating symptoms of the disease. Now, we are becoming cyborgs. The human body version 2.0 scenario presents the continuation of the long-standing trend in which we grow more intimate with our technology. We snuggle up to it at night and put a little technology a machine in our mouths and suck ourselves to sleep on the nanotechnology. You could just see it, you know. Have to make a little fun of this. All right. Computers started out as large remote machines in air-conditioned buildings tended by white-coated technicians. They moved on to our desk, then on to our arms, and now into our pockets. Soon we will routinely put them inside our bodies and brains. By 2030, we will become more non-biological than biological. By 2040, non-biological intelligence will be billions of times more capable than our biological intelligence. And what happens if it fails and you die? Because you haven't solved the problem of death. This is pure fantasy. However, there is a way around all of these inherited limitations. Biological evolution did not create the species that could think and manipulate its environment. That species is now succeeding in accessing and improving its own design and is capable of reconsidering and altering the very basic tenets of biology. A new species. Human Body Version 3.0. I envision the human body 3.0 in the 2030s and 2040s as a more fundamental redesign. Rather than reformulating each subsystem, we, both the biological and non-biological portions of our thinking working together, you can think yourself into something great, right? Yes. We'll have the opportunity to revamp our bodies based on our experience with version 2.0, as with the transition from 1.0 to 2.0, the transition to 3.0 will be gradually and will involve many competing ideas. One attribute I envision for version 3.0 is the ability to change our bodies. We will be able to do that very easily in virtual reality environments. But we will also acquire the means to do this in real reality. We will incorporate the MNT-based fabrication into ourselves, so we will be able to rapidly alter our physical manifestation as well. That is, come and go wherever you want to go. Become someone else. And I'll end here with this. In virtual reality, we won't be restricted to a single personality. Since we will be able to change our appearance and effectively become other people, without altering our physical body in real reality, we will be able to readily transform our projected body in these three-dimensional virtual environments. We can select different bodies at the same time for different people. So your parents may see you as one person while your girlfriend will experience you as another. However, the other person may choose to override your selections, preferring to see you differently than the body you have chosen for yourself. I would pick different body projections for different people. There you go. We become God, make ourselves what we're going to do, and you are no longer the individual that you really are. You are an absolute lie and a fake because you have assumed these proportions. Utterly stupid and ridiculous. Now we'll examine some more things in the scripture to give answers to these things that we have read and brought up. Let's go to the next track, please.